Hello everyone, I'm Louis Vargas, and you're listening to episode 35 of the Art Scene Podcast. Oropeza. Today's guest is Cristo Oropeza, co-founder and owner of Incline Gallery, which is an alternative art space here in San Francisco that fosters relationships between the community and its artists. But before I get into our conversation, I wanted to tell you a few things that are happening here in the Bay Area arts community. The first, the Museum of African Diaspora, has a couple shows that recently opened, one being Black Refractions, Highlights from the Studio Museum in Harlem, and the other titled Phone Home, featuring the work of Sadie Barnett. Both shows feature beautiful work by awesome artists, so I highly recommend visiting before they close on April 14th. Then over at the Minnesota Street Project, my friends at Bassin Rayner Gallery have a new show titled Indispensable Things We Had to Do Without. It is a group show featuring the work of Adrienne Michonne, Alex Molinari, Santiago Pignol, and former guest of the podcast, Stephanie Rolfe. The show is up till March 16th, so be sure to visit if you happen to be in town. Alright, as I mentioned earlier, my guest today is Cristo Oropeza, and aside from Incline Gallery, he is also an artist himself, and involved with developing various programming and projects throughout the Bay Area art scene. It was great to talk to him about the type of work he has done, and hear his thoughts about the direction art institutions should be heading in the future. Now, here's our conversation. So thanks for coming on, Cristo.
Thanks for having me.
It's finally good to have you on because I know we've been trying to like forever like meet up and find a time to like do this.
Yeah. Keep rescheduling.
You're
a busy dude.
But you are too. You're busy. Like other than your regular day job, you do other stuff outside, so you're always on the go.
Yeah.
But you're from San Francisco, right?
I was born at St. Luke's Hospital in Valencia and Cesar Chavez.
You're another native San Franciscan.
One of the other natives, Have you interviewed other natives on the show?
It's been no, I don't think I have. Maybe like one or two, but like
cool.
It's been hard. It's hard to find native San Franciscans,
Yep, they call us the unicorns, I guess.
Well, what neighborhood you grew up in?
You know what? My parents were the last Mexicans in Noe Valley. We grew up right off of 24th Street, and I went to high school out near Visitation Valley. I went to Philip Burton High School.
Yeah.
And then after that, I went to SF State. So I kept it all local, all regional.
Yeah.
A little bit of the townie syndrome early on there in my 20s.
And still here.
Still here, yeah. But with a more growth mindset.
Yeah. Did you even go to college here?
Yeah, SF State. So I went, SF State's out by 19th Avenue, up by the beach.
Yeah.
There I majored in fine arts.
Yeah.
So I graduated in 2008. Yeah. From there with an emphasis in painting and drawing.
Yeah.
I could have done a Raza minor, but it would have kept me in school a little longer.
What is a Raza minor?
I had taken enough courses in the ethnic studies department that I had enough units in the Raza department. You know the Raza department?
No, tell me about this. This is the first I've heard of this.
Now I'm on the spot with my historical context. But Raza was born of it's part of the ethnic studies movement, and it was born as a way to tell the history of the Chicanos in a way, of the experience of those not from there, neither from here, I guess is one way that I would explain it.
Is it kind of like basically like a Chicano studies program, but like, but they called it
but they call it Raza studies,
Oh, that's interesting.
After La Raza. Raza studies. And so, you know, what's funny anecdote about that was like, here I was, I had taken almost enough courses to do a minor, but that's just because it took me a long time to get out of SF State.
Yeah.
And the year that I was about to graduate, I remember an incoming freshman holding a catalog with a schedule for the semester, and she's like, wow, who's this Raza dude? He must have been really famous. Look how many classes they named after him. And I was just like, oh, man, like, I'm glad I'm getting out of here, but that's not a good sign.
Tell me about growing up in Noe Valley, because you mentioned your parents are Mexican. Like, are they from the United States originally?
No, they were born. They were born down in Jalisco.
In Jalisco?
Yeah.
And what brought them up here?
Work. Yeah, my grandfather had been coming over here. Both my grandfathers on my mom and my father's side. On my mother's side, He had come over to do rail work and some farm work in Central Valley. The rail work he did over in Chicago. And then he went back to Mexico. And then my father's father, they're both deceased, rest in peace. Mm-hmm. But he came over here and he started working in the fields. Mm-hmm. And then he went back when my dad was old enough at 16 years old. And then he brought him over here with him so he could work the fields. So they work side by side in Central Valley, all up in north and south.
Yeah.
You know, Ukiah, as far north as Ukiah. But wherever there was work, they would go around. So I think my dad worked in the fields with my grandpa from age 16 to 20. I want to say like 20, 4 years. And then somehow my grandfather got in good with the Italians and he started working over at the garbage company, now known as Recology, but formerly known as Sunset Scavenger.
Oh, interesting.
So yeah, they folded in the Mexicanos into their company. And yeah, essentially after that, my father's brothers mostly work there.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's like kind of family business. It's like,
what does your dad do now?
He's still a garbage man.
Really?
Yeah, I think he's worked for them for 54 years now.
Yeah.
He's primed to retire. He's 72 years old, but he still goes to work. We're along that lineage of Mexicanos of just like work until we can't,
yeah,
kind of a MO. Yeah. We're trying to get him to retire, though.
So then, like, you know, you mentioned you majored in art and fine arts in college. Mm-hmm. Growing up, was art prevalent in your upbringing? Like, was your family into art, or was that something you found on your own?
You know, I think it was supplemented through school, but it was never fully developed or encouraged in school.
Yeah.
But first and foremost, it was my mother who taught me how to draw on paper napkins. And, you know, she'd be like, this is how you draw a lion, and this is how you draw an elephant. And I was like, oh, cool, shapes make other things.
Was she artistic?
But, you know, like, her life was, she grew up in the rancho and then, like, you know, went to middle school. And then at the age of 21, at the age of 19, she was married to my father. So between, you know, getting out of middle school at 13, 14 to 5 years later when she was married, she was, you know,
yeah,
lived at home with her folks.
Right.
But she always drew, and her mother always wrote poetry.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and so I think the way my mom mostly taught me about creativity was both in teaching basics of drawing, but in gardening.
Wow.
Yeah, like taking me to the backyard and just like, you know, water the plants and all that kind of stuff. Little things, you know?
Yeah.
I used to hate when she would grab snails and just like smack them on the ground. Like, whack. I'm like, wow, they're alive. Like, I got to want them here. But, you know, growing up in Noe Valley, there at home, it wasn't prevalent, but there was art stores nearby. You know, middle school really had a good art teacher. High school, I think, was the largest opportunity lost on me for... You know, I can't like go back and I'm not worried about it, but you know, mostly like that was a lost opportunity where now in hindsight I realize the value of being distracted in class or causing distractions, mm-hmm, you know, because I was guilty of both. But in art class, like we were throwing clay at each other instead of learning how to throw on a wheel.
Yeah.
You know, we were like messing around and it was like not a great school and it was kind of bad, not that bad, but it was kind of bad. So it was hard to focus. And really, like, everything started to hone in the college years. I was working at an art store in Noe Valley, and I was trying to get back into the art program at SF State because it was hard to get in. And I met a professor from SF State at that art store, and he was buying some supplies, and he was asked if he could take a look at, like, my notebook. And after looking at the notebook, at the sketchbook and stuff, he was like, so why aren't you, you know, starting the program? And I was like, because, you know, freshmen get priority registration.
Right.
Like, it really is hard to get that. He's like, I'll let you drop in on three of my classes. So that was Paul Mullins.
Wow.
And so he got me three of the four classes that I need to get back into SF State because I had taken a break at City College at that point. So I got back in full time and the rest was just sort of like, tuning in, learning how to paint, learning how to draw, mostly learning how to look at things and see them.
Yeah.
And then I did a short stint in student government there. I did, I think, 2.5 years total.
Yeah.
And at the end, I was vice president of university affairs. But that's really what taught me some, what would I call them? Just the office skills, like, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I would chair meetings. I would.
Well, what made you want to do that? Like, because just to go back a little bit. So, like, when you graduated from high school, did you go straight to college?
Straight to SF State.
And then you took a break.
I took a break from SF State, but I stayed in school at City.
And why did you take the break?
I was unfocused and bored, and I thought I wanted to pursue film. And SF State at the time had a really great film program, but it was also even harder to get into.
Yeah.
So I figured I would go and try it out at City, which was cheaper.
Right.
And I could experiment, but I found myself thinking a lot of the time about composition, color, and you know, artistic direction versus like director of a film.
Right.
Yeah. So that's how I'd taken some time off and then went back.
So now you're back and now you're in the art program.
Yeah.
So it's interesting, you know, you went from where you originally took a break because you're a little bit, you were bored and like, you know, and unfocused. And then all of a sudden now you're like in it and you're involved. You're like involved even in student government.
I got focused. Yeah.
What was the turning point for that? Because, you know, aside from being just, you know, being in the arts program, what made you want to be interested in like in student government?
I think there's a root with my grandfather on my father's side, and I always knew and I observed, because every summer we'd go back to Mexico and I'd spend time with him at the ranch in the town, and like I always saw him act diplomatically, and like, you know, even after we were done milking the cows and dropping off the milk to get pasteurized, then we would stop at another place that's called a pastureria, but basically where they like pack hay for feed for the cows and stuff. And, and you know, they had some, you know, influence in the local government. And so my grandfather was a big part of that organization. And so he had some influence through on government through that. And also their church is really big. And so he was a big church guy. And he had some political and like community like influence through that. And so I always saw that. And I always liked it. Like I guess I'm a Leo Virgo cusp. And I guess that plays to my Virgo side if I have any, but like it essentially like it interested me. Like my girlfriend at the time was in student government, and like I was listening to what she was up to. I was like, "What?" And they give you $350 as a stipend just for that?
Yeah.
Or $500.
Yeah.
I was like, "That's cool. They pay you to like go and sit in a meeting. Like I want to do that too." But really opened up my eyes to the nonprofit, how it's run, sitting down, working on a budget, distributing that budget, overseeing, I think, 5 programs at the time that we had.
Yeah.
But really, like, learning something that I didn't know.
Yeah.
And I hated the political aspect of it, but I got really prendido. I got, like what turned me on about it was, I guess, knowing how to move things, knowing how to create something.
Yeah.
And like bring it into the real. And like, you know, if that was in this format, you know, following Murphy's Law of Order, or, you know, I'm sorry, Robert's Rules of Order.
Yeah.
Murphy's Law is a different thing, but Robert's Rules of Order of like, you know, we're going to introduce this as an informational item this week, and next week it's an action item. So we're thinking of things and we're putting them into effect.
Sure.
And so I like that a lot. I like that, you know, we could organize ourselves in a room and develop ideas and then actually have them come to fruition and develop. I didn't help develop the program, but you know, at some point, people before me did the Early Childhood Development Center, sexual awareness organization, and funded a bunch of the student organizations as well. So we had to like budget that out. So I liked that part, and I, you know, at the end of college, I loved art, and I hated politics, or even kid politics there. But I needed to find a way. I was like, I remember looking back through a sketchbook recently. It's like, how do I put what I'm good at together?
Yeah.
And like, I think that really caused the root of like wanting to form an art collective right after college.
Yeah, I was going to say, because I was going to ask you, like, after college, like, what did you decide to do? Because having both this experience with student government, but then at the same time, you're very artistic minded, right?
Yeah.
Like, how did you end up combining the two? Because, which we'll get to, you're very involved in a lot of different things in the San Francisco community. Yeah.
So 2008, I graduated. 2008, the economy crashed. I was in the middle of, I graduated and Frida Kahlo had just opened up as an exhibition. I had already been working at San Francisco Museum of Modern Art at that point for 3 years.
And what were you doing? Was that like your job while you were in school?
Yeah, so I went full time my final semester and went to school full time. I always worked while I was going to school. That's also why it took me a long time.
Yeah.
And I worked part time, so up to 32 hours.
Right.
Let's see. So Frida Kahlo was here. I was working full time. So my job was secure. It was a union job.
What department were you working in?
Frontline. I was information desk. So my job at the time was to be out on 3rd Street, and there was lines for Frida Kahlo that, you know, reached all the way around to Minna Street and to on the other side of the W Hotel. They just wrapped around the corner.
Wow.
And my job was to sort of talk and calm down the line.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, let them know information, how long the wait is till they bought tickets. So I had a job, had a lot of people around me still, less people than in college, but a lot of people that work here that are creative. Mm. So I could have conversations that felt similar to what I was having as I was growing into my own in college. Sure. And I kind of put two and two together. I was like, you know what? Like, as artists, like, our only fighting chance right now, we still got jobs. Why don't we organize ourselves outside of work and catch some projects?
Sure.
Like, if somebody needs a graphic design project, we have some graphic design folks. Mural comes down the pike, boom, we got it. And yeah, so that's what happened. We formed an art collective. Brian Perrin, my business partner at Incline Gallery, one of them, he got our first mural project at Mission Pie. So we painted that in 2009.
Well, what's the name of the? What was the name of the art collective?
San Pancho Art Collective.
And is it still? You still keep it going? Or is it kind of on hiatus?
We are all connected, but it sort of disintegrated once we opened up Incline Gallery.
Oh, okay.
But there's definitely, you know, it's a special relationship bond that formed then. I realize that now because a lot of us are still in contact.
Yeah.
I'm in contact with all of them, but a lot of people still like touch each other and hit each other up.
Yeah.
You know, from that time.
Yeah.
Aside
from mural projects, what other types of things were you guys doing?
So aside from the mural, we did pop-up shows. So again, the economy was down, empty storefronts were in all over San Francisco. We wrote letters to landlords, and we asked them if they were interested in letting an art collective in to show an art show.
Yeah.
And we offered a barter trade of leaving your space in a better condition than when we got into it.
Sure.
So if that included, you know, doing some basic drywall, mudding, painting, some simple electric stuff, but we had skilled labor, so, you know, we did that twice.
Yeah.
And it worked. And that really, you know, we documented those things, so that really set us up for by the time Incline Gallery came as an email to me, it's like, hey, you might be interested in this, check it out.
Yeah.
Primed and ready, we had documentation. We had already demonstrated that we were not just a bunch of kids trying to drink beer and, you know, do art, that right. It was like a legitimate start of something.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of like what that turned into. Other projects included some graphic design, but, you know, we produced shows at El Rio, which were just super fun fundraisers where we had, you know, circus style kind of elements with raffles, with live painting. It was just kind of like activation time, mostly. Mm. It's like, hey, it's a shitty economy, but nonetheless, we could make things, we could do things, we could create
right.
capital of a different nature, cultural capital.
So then what led to then the creation of Incline Gallery, which you still currently own?
Yeah, we just celebrated our 8-year anniversary. We're in the beginning of the 9th year. So again, I'll go back to when we were writing letters to landlords and doing pop-up shows. The Excelsior community was really helpful and in our case strategic. We partnered with their local community organization, and so again we did our pop-ups, we organized shows, we sold some artwork even at those shows. I made sure to invite press, I made sure to like invite the people that would be interested. So when Incline came, it was in the form of an email from the same information desk that I was at working for Frida Kahlo. My coworker Dana received an email from another artist, this guy Chris Brennan, and she said, I might be interested in this. I was like, oh, okay. And so I opened it, and it was a Craigslist post, that said, weird space in the Mission, begging to be transformed into a gallery. Approximately 3,000 square feet, you know, email to inquire, serious inquiries only. And, you know, we basically that turned into a meeting,
yeah.
which turned into a proposal, which turned into another proposal. And there was three people ahead of us
yeah.
that had gotten to the ad before us.
Yeah.
But again, it helped us that we had like been organized and documented the work that right. we had done. And I you know, that's credit to the organization of an art collective. Like, you sure. know what we should do? We should totally like document this. And like, yeah, you're right. Can you bring your camera?
Well, tell me the process of that, because like you mentioned, you know, the setting is that it's the recession right? In the middle of the recession.
Yeah, it just started.
Yeah, you're working part-time,
full-time.
Or full-time at this point, but like at a museum, but not like the highest paying job, right?
Not at the time, but it wasn't bad.
Right. Yeah. And so like, how do you guys get together and be able to like embark on this like journey to like be able to rent out a space and then start, you know, gathering the materials and whatever you needed to like get it going as a gallery?
For Incline?
Yeah.
So I think that's where it was both timing. So, you know, Incline opened. I got the keys, I think, with Brian, September 2010. And when we got in there, you know, the art collective, art collectives are difficult to organize and to maintain leadership within, to share leadership within is an important component because it is a collective. And we had 20 people initially, which is a really unmanageable amount of artists to try to do. I mean, sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. Like the Amp Farm Collective is pretty big, I think. Mm-hmm. But you know, I mean, we were all young and everybody was like worrying about jobs, places to live, evictions. So little by little, people started sort of doing their own thing. Mm-hmm. The interesting part is like, as it was sort of, you know, coming apart, disintegrating, like everybody's still in good standing with each other for the most part, but it kind of came down to like, who are the people that are saying, what could I do versus what is this doing for me? Because those were the people getting impatient when, you know, the lull of creative projects was happening. And so really, it was critical to ask the question like, well, who's really going to be down to help and develop this? And that's when I knew to talk to Brian Perrin first.
Sure.
And we talked to Eli and a bunch of other people that were just showing up. You know, people that came to help us sand the floors and prepare the space itself. But really, you know, to answer your question now in short, we threw a fundraiser at El Rio. We made, I think, $2,000 at the fundraiser, and we used those first $2,000 to do the first show, open up the first show, pay for sandpaper, pay for whatever we need to get the gallery up and running.
Right.
And we did it super cheap. We found everything used, and we just kind of got it off the ground like a Wright Brothers airplane. It was like, I think it's flying.
Well, explain a little bit, too, about the cool part about this gallery, which is why it's called Incline Gallery.
Yeah.
This unique shape of the unique layout.
So Incline, the building that Incline resides at, 766 Valencia, formerly was a mortuary. And Incline Gallery, you have to walk down the side of a building through a black gate, a narrow alleyway. And that leads to a series of three ramps. And at the top of the ramp is the end of Incline Gallery. But the ramps are where the bodies were carried up and down in the mortuary. And the bodies were prepared upstairs as well in one of the offices, which now is another organization called Satellite of Love. And we rent out that space to them.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So yeah, it's a very unique gallery. They call it the Guggenheim of the Guggenheim of the Mission.
Right, because the whole gallery itself is the ramps.
Yeah.
Like the work is on the walls of as you're walking up the ramp.
And you could see multiple layers of work at different points and different vistas. So it's a beautiful place. Like it's the most unique, one of the most unique, if not the most unique place in San Francisco to continuously exhibit art.
Sure. And since opening, how's been the programming? Has it been continuous?
Yeah.
Have you felt that you've gotten enough momentum and enough production to be able to keep it going every month for the last 8 years?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I learned early on that even with the art collective, that consistency is key. And so there's a sort of a simple formula early on that we wanted to stick to. It's like keep the quality high. But also be inclusive.
Yeah.
But again, like caliber is important.
Yeah.
And consistency in programming. So I think the first year, out of the 12 months, I think we did 10 shows, which was insane.
Sure.
And then we started, you know, I think we did a show like every 4 weeks, we turned it around and did another show. Because the reality of this gallery is that it's, you know, an artist-run gallery, and both of the owners, co-founders, were working full-time outside of there.
Mm-hmm.
But it was important for us to keep it there. It was important for us to have it. It was important for us to share it.
Yeah.
And, like, keep the programming up. And, you know, it was a time where lots of galleries were closing down.
Yeah.
You know, the big exodus from downtown 49 Geary happened during the time that Incline was open. You know, everybody moved out to Minnesota Street.
Yeah.
And to other areas of San Francisco.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, how have you been able to survive that? Because I think that was like a couple years ago, right? When all of a sudden there were so many galleries closing.
Yeah, I think it was like 7 years. No, it was like 6 years ago, 5 years ago. You know what? We have a great relationship with our landlord. And, you know, we found a really weird space.
Yeah.
And so I feel like, I mean, it's a blessing. You know, it's like, you know, the landlord's so generous to have thought that this space could be used creatively.
Yeah.
You know, you don't get that many landlords in San Francisco thinking that way. And, you know, just being open to that is giving opportunity for culture to thrive at a time where, you know, it was an exit. It was leaving, you know, it was in flux, yeah. I would say, because there was new things coming into the city. We've survived just by, you know, having a good situation.
Yeah,
it's a lot of it was luck to even get that email at the information.
Yeah, that's for right. Sure.
Anybody could have gotten that.
Yeah, which is funny because I think of most of everybody I've spoken to who have embarked on projects like this or like have opened up galleries. A lot of times, luck is a big factor.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, luck is like it's like opportunity is like a comet. And you got to be able to catch it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it flies right over your head, and the person behind you is ready to catch it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Always be prepared.
Do you curate some of the shows at Incline or most of the shows?
I do curate some of the shows.
Is it like a shared responsibility with
yeah,
some people?
Yeah, so, you know, this last year we placed Shirin Makarimi as new director there. And she's doing great. And so she's pointing the exhibitions and some of them she's curating herself. And what I mean by pointing is like this next show, for example, is being guest curated by Kat. Tritaris,
mm-hmm.
And she is exhibiting with, I believe, Kaylin and with Daniel Mendoza, Kaylin Peterson, I believe. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so having the space so that guest curators have a space to come and work is also an important facet of supporting the arts ecosystem.
Yeah.
Because it's not necessarily, you know, it's most importantly like artists making the work have to support the infrastructure and provide space for that. And then it's the ecosystem around it, like the writers, and also the curators and giving people space. It's the most valuable thing, time and space. And to know that we could share that and create quality programming through it and build bridges to different audiences because we don't represent anybody at Incline Gallery. Mm-hmm. And so it's a, you know, it's always a refresh. And that's great to me, you know, like it's not binding.
Right.
But then again, it's like, you know, I work on building real relationships with the people that come in through that door. Or at least I have in the past. This past year, I've taken a little bit of a step back and I've started working and sort of did some re-strategizing on how Incline could have impact beyond just the mission, just beyond San Francisco.
Yeah.
And really it came from the idea of not thinking of ourselves as just a small gallery in the mission. But, you know, a gallery who could participate on a global scale.
Yeah.
Just figuring out how to do that.
Well, here's a question, because, like, so you just mentioned you have a artistic director that runs it.
Right? We have a director there, yeah.
Yeah, and so you co-own it, right?
Co-own
and co-found it, but then you guys actually hired somebody to actually be, like, the director?
Well, brought her into ownership of
So, oh, that's cool.
So, right. You know, she's got skin on the game.
Right.
It's the way we run it there as family.
Yeah.
And so we were very, very careful on who to pick. Shirin was already part of the Incline family, though. She came through the internship program that I had started. So I went back to SF State and requested that we start some sort of something.
Yeah.
I needed help there. Brian needed help there. So we went and we established a 4-credit-based internship.
Oh, cool.
So I specifically only dealt with seniors the first 5 years because they were the most motivated. But we started getting sophomores and juniors.
Yeah.
Those were the ones that would be like, I can't come this weekend.
Right.
But we all do that. So, you know, that internship program, Shirin came through it and she was always just a shining star. Independent thinking, didn't take any shit. Very intelligent, just like connected to people, right? So she had that same thing where she actually connects with the artist. And I think that's a big, important part of curation.
Yeah.
Rather than just connecting with the ideas that the artists are creating and curating that.
Sure.
It's like, you know, the person's right there. That, you know, they are an important part of the work that's being made.
Yeah.
which is like a nice, like, I mean, that's like one of those interesting conversations, right?
Right.
Because I've heard sometimes galleries don't even want artists at the art fairs because it's just one other step in getting in the way of a sale.
Oh, that's interesting.
Right. Yeah. You know, it's all about selling
at
that level. So going back to it, we trusted Shirin, you know, and so we brought her in as family and like offered it and she accepted. So now she's part of the Incline family. Year to year, we, you know, review contracts and see where we're at. We check in.
So it's interesting because now, you know, after hearing your background and hearing your growth basically within the art community, you know, at first you started out wanting to like be like an artist. You're like studying and you still are, like, because you still paint and you
I just finished a new series and I just pitched a mural idea, which I'm not ready to announce, but I could talk about that at some other time.
And then you've had this like experience with student government, and it's funny because I think whatever experience you got from there, you seem to like merge them perfectly together, and started like you are like very interested in organizing and doing something and collaborating with people.
Yes,
and
in a real way.
Yeah, and you're doing it through Incline Gallery. You even brought in someone else into the business to like help you guys run it, and you work collaboratively with them.
Correct.
To like keep running the gallery and keep bringing shows in there.
Yeah.
In some way, too, like you're a curator too, mm-hmm. and funny enough, you now even advise. So I saw that you, online somewhere, that you're on the curatorial council for Acción Latina.
Shout out to all the folks at Acción Latina. A friend of mine, Josue Rojas, became the executive director there, and I was lucky enough to be invited on the curatorial committee. And we're having fun. It's great. It was great to reconnect with, you know, I'll just be very blunt, like the part of Valencia Street that I'm on isn't the mission that I know, isn't the mission that we know that grew up out here. And it's so great to still feel the pulse, the vibrating pulse. It's well and alive down on Calle 24 and like, you know, the organizations that are there, and Acción Latina owns their building, and, you know, El Tecolote is doing great and thriving, and, you know, the programming at the Juan Fuentes Gallery is amazing. Like, some of the artists that I've seen there, you know, I'm so excited about because they're brand new. They're young, 2022, with a skill set that's blowing my mind. I'm like, oh, of course. Like, yeah, you know, there's other ways. There's other worlds. But I like that about the arts is, like, there's room for plurality and there's room for multitudes. And I like that. You know, I could still contribute or feel valuable where I'm asked to be, you know, to contribute whatever it is that I can.
Yeah.
I think after you said that, it's like, I think that's why one of my biggest switches recently, you know, I always thought of going back to school for the MFA, but, you know, working at SFMOMA the last 13 years, and I don't work in the organizational part, I work in operations, but my mind works. Like, I guess what I'm saying is I switched my mind, and I think if I go back to school, I would go to get an MBA, mm-hmm. and I would focus on institutions and museums.
Yeah.
Because I think that they're beyond primed and ready for change.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
And so are galleries.
Yeah.
In that sense. And, you know, there's a lot of, I feel like we're on the precipice of change right now, and that's why there's a lot of growing pains.
Yeah.
But, and there's some changing of the guard that's happening. But I'm really keenly interested in, you know, ideas that I've talked about with the most wonderful people in my life, the nonprofit model. And does that actually work for institutions? Mm-hmm. And is that, you know, still feasible? Mm-hmm. And if not, then what does an alternative version look like?
Sure.
Who is it funded by? I'm still very like, I love having those conversations, right? Like that, and I love talking about mixing paint and like, how did you do that? And, you know, what's your technique? But, you know, I think they feed each other.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, what kind of change are you think when you talk about change, when you say that museums and art galleries are primed for change, what kind of change are you talking about?
I think that would be a participatory conversation that would develop and it would evolve on its own. But I think the most important thing is the artist. And from there, you know, like if we started including the arts in school early on and it becomes indoctrinated as something as important as the sciences, mm-hmm. that we could, you know, really think about, I don't know, just growth in that sense. So I'll give you an example. I think art collectives are stronger than institutions, but they're also equally as fickle, you know? But I think, let me not ramble too much, like what it could look like. I mean, if we take a look at the M Plus in Hong Kong, and do you know about that?
No, tell me about it.
That's a museum that's being built, but it's a neighborhood that's being built. And the museum is going to be entirely funded by the residents that live around there, sort of as like a local tax. Mm-hmm. The idea is that you want to live in an area full of culture, and you know, you living there, your money that you're working at there, that you're, you know, paying rent to or owning, supplements and funds the museum entirely. So you remove trustees, you remove, you remove that side of the power of the equation, and the work then becomes part of the people.
Sure.
It's a different funding model.
Yeah.
You know, I imagine that I, as an artist, would probably want to live in a neighborhood like that.
Yeah.
I'd be like, that's cool, right?
Yeah.
And this is part, and maybe, and I think that, you know, they have access to programming certain parts of their neighborhood, right? Like, that's amazing.
Yeah, I was going to say that it leads to more likely the work being exhibited in the museum.
And integrated.
Would be like more of the community, and it wouldn't be like the same old stuff that you would see over and over again at bigger museums.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I think that would be a great direction to, just as one example of like one iteration of what museums could look like or really like.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting about that model that you're saying is that because then it grows with the community. As the community grows, it grows with it. And then as there's a turnover, as like people grow old and die, but then new people are like, new kids are growing up, then like
generations
pass through. You have to, it will truly be reflective of the changing of the times.
Yeah. So I'm interested in that in institutions, but I don't know. I like being a conduit to connect different people.
Yeah.
I think growing up in SF, it's important for me to feel like I need to help continue to connect people.
So you're still very much committed to like help, like being like with San Francisco, the art community in San Francisco, and being a part of it and making it grow and making it better.
Absolutely. I think we have a valuable culture here. I think it's historical in nature. It's just been thinned out by a lot of money recently.
Yeah.
But, you know, the heart is still there. We're still here.
Yeah.
But it's, again, it goes back to making space for having those conversations and, you know, letting those words reach the ears of people that are here now.
Sure.
And engage in that, like, you know, throw something back at me. Like, let's have this conversation. But definitely am committed. However, you know, I think recently, too, I started doing this artist exchange with Philadelphia. And, you know, again, like I'm very committed to the Bay, but I have a growth mindset now. And like, I want to see ourselves beyond our own limitations here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that means that could be translated for me is like, how do I help get artists' artworks instead of just putting them up at Incline? Mm-hmm. Like, let's work on some public projects in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Why not? Like, what's holding us back?
Yeah.
And a relationship really formed organically with this art collective called Traction Company. Shout out Traction in Philly. They're on Instagram as @TractionCompany, all one word, all spelled out. But connecting with them as an art collective, they're amazing. They're all Pennsylvania Academy of Fine Art graduates. They have a great space. Traction comes from their space. It's a trolley, old trolley building space. So traction on the railroad, traction on the tracks. So my theory is to support the local by going outside and giving ourselves opportunities outside of San Francisco. And maybe there's some money to be made there for artists outside of it.
Right.
At the same time, solving a problem that I've defined that I think, I could be incorrect, but I don't know, I might share this view with people, is like at a time when it became harder and harder to stay living creatively in San Francisco, right? If you didn't have enough salary to find a place to rent.
Sure.
Or whatever the situation is, that there became a depleted stock of cultural capital.
Yeah.
And I just want to help inject, like support the blood that's still here.
Yeah.
And let that grow, let that develop, and let it become mature.
Yeah.
And that's the Bay. But then also let's inject some outside equal stuff. Let's inject some interesting work from Philadelphia here. And likewise, Mexico City, I got my target set on that next and starting an exchange with some people out there. And thinking of ourselves, again, it goes to the basic premise of thinking of ourselves beyond our own limitations here.
Yeah.
We're not just a small art gallery, or we're not just artists in the Bay Area.
Right.
Like, we have the capacity to do what we want and go as international or national as we want. And right. if I could help you, if right. I could be a conduit to connect those things, mm-hmm. I love doing it. I just got to find somebody to hire me for doing it.
You know? Well, you know, that leads to my next question, is that having this interesting background and experience, and you know, you work here at SF Moment Operations, but obviously you're more than just a guy who works in operations.
Yeah.
You work curatorially, you work basically running an art gallery and sometimes or like an organization.
Mm-hmm. And still painting.
And still, yeah, and still paints. What is really the dream job for you? Like, what, I mean, if you were to, like, 5-10 years from now, what are you hoping to see yourself as?
My lady asks me that question all the time. I was like, you don't know, do you? No. It's an interesting question. It's a great question. It's one that I've been working out. You know, I go to therapy. You know, the last year I've been going to therapy is the best choice I've made for myself in my adult, sure. in my adulthood. And I'm working it out. It's a very complex question. I think, I could give you a simple answer. I think a perfect dream job would be an amalgam of all of those things that I am,
sure.
put together to serve the greater community, to serve, you know, if it's an institution, to serve them to build ties to the community, or to serve them to build up their collection.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, as long as I'm connecting artists to audiences,
yeah.
in one way or another, and in that way learning about myself and how I connect to audiences through my work as well, like, yeah. I'm learning all of this for me,
yeah,
and to share. But it's like, these lessons are real. I'm like, oh, that makes sense. That's how that part of the world works.
Yeah.
Okay. So a dream job would be, you know, maybe the director at a contemporary art museum,
yeah,
that has its core values in being a responsible business, that has alternative, you know, sort of ways of funding to decentralize power in yeah. art. To sort of like redistribute it. That sounds very socialist. But to like kind of like, you know, to give power to those that are ready to have it, and to give responsibility to those that are ready to have it. It'd be great to be at a director position by 10 years from now. I'll be 45 by then.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's something I would 100% want. But you know, then it would have flavor. Like it would be something different. It would be a cousin to an institution, but it would be something new.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I think it's time to blend different things together.
Yeah.
You know, it's the art that's here at this museum is sort of like a mausoleum. You come here to see dead items. Like, yeah. we took them out of their context. That's one example of that conversation.
Sure.
So why aren't we mixing with other things? Like, how do we blend different worlds together,
yeah.
to get art as part of our palpable conversation.
Sure.
Even if it's like, you know, contemporary Muslim fashions at the De Young, you know, getting, you know, not only is it like this huge first time exhibition for Muslim fashion in the United States, and it's going to travel, but also like as a political statement that it started here,
yeah.
you know, going alongside the history of ethnic studies and sort of, you know, civil rights history in the Bay Area, it's like, ooh, I still feel the vein. There's still consciousness here. There's still artistic quality here. Like, let's get us on the map. Like, we're on the map, but let's keep building this up. Let's keep growing. Let's keep evolving. And bring some of the original roots that still work, you know, like,
yeah,
like being active, being an activist, and being conscious, and keeping open, and not just closing off.
Yeah.
You know, as a citizen. Ideal job would be that.
Yeah. Nice. Well, thanks for coming on, man.
Awesome.
I really really enjoyed talking to you about this stuff. And you know, real quick before I let you go, do you have what's coming up? You want to plug anything that's like coming up in the next couple weeks or so?
Yeah. So basically, at Incline Gallery, opening February 1st is going to be a show called The Unmonumental, and that's actually. February 1st through March 1st. The exhibition has a preview week starting on January 25th, but it's a group show with works by Daniel Arthur Mendoza, Kate Peterson, and Kat Trataris. And it's going to be sculptures, paintings, and installations, cacophonous both in their varied media and palette. But if you want to read more information about that, inclinegallerysf.com. If you want to follow me on Instagram, I'm at orochristo, at O-R-O-C-H-R-I-S-T-O. Give a follow over to Incline Gallery. That's at I-N-C-L-I-N-E-G-A-L-L-E-R-Y. So give us both a follow. You'll be able to see my artwork. I got some exciting projects coming up, my own personal paintings. And Incline Gallery has got a year, a fun year ahead of us. So we're looking forward to it. And thank you for having me on.
Yeah, cool, man. Yeah, and hopefully I can have you on again and we could talk about other stuff.
Let's do it.
Cool, man.
Thanks. Thanks, Lewis.
See ya.
Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening, everyone. And thanks again to Cristo for coming onto the podcast. To learn more about Incline Gallery and its various programming, visit inclinegallerysf.com or follow them on Instagram at Incline Gallery. You can also follow Cristo on his Instagram page at Orochristo. Lastly, if you like what you heard today, please be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts or leave a rating and a comment. You can also check out pictures of Cristo and his work on the podcast website at artscenepc.com. All right, till next time, everyone.